Shadowcast, Episode 31. This week's story, The Traveler, by Philip Carroll. Philip Carroll is a family man in Central California. He started writing 100-word stories in the 100-word weekly challenge about 18 months ago. Philip is a regular participant on the Great Heights podcast. He's also the co-editor of the newly formed Flying Island Press, eMag, and audio magazine, where they're doing some really cool stuff. He's also a recent graduate of the Jeremy C. Shipp online fiction writing course. This is the second story accepted since that course. The other will be released in Critical Media Press's Spring Benefit book. And here's our story, The Traveler, read by the author.
The Traveler by Philip E. Carroll.
Mr. Mark,
the hired Sherpa chattered in a staccato English.
You must inspect each piece of equipment for the final ascent tomorrow morning. It is for your safety and for mine as well.
The summit of Mount Everest loomed above Camp 4 silently, a contemplative beast, lazy and surreal in the late afternoon sun, like an old photograph enlarged too many times. Mark surveyed the array of equipment spread across the nylon tarp in front of the tents. Come on, Ping Pong, Mark said. It wasn't the Tibetan guide's name, but was as close an approximation as Mark cared enough to give. He waved his hand toward the equipment. We inspected it yesterday and the day before. He dropped heavily onto the snow next to the tarp and blew through pursed lips. And we bought it brand new just 2 weeks ago. I really don't see the need.
Oh, Mr. Mark,
the Sherpa said through smiling yellow teeth, though his eyes were cold and devoid of humor.
We argue this the same every day. We must inspect to be safe.
The small man didn't wait for another response, but picked up a shiny aluminum carabiner and flipped the gate several times to ensure it moved freely and the spring was strong. Mark sighed and picked up one end of the climbing rope. Like a blind man reading Braille, he passed the dynamic climbing rope between his gloved fingers and felt for inconsistencies in the continuous nylon fibers. Weakness or damage to the core, or kern, was hidden from sight by the woven outer casing. Weakness in the core could result in a deadly fall. Mark felt the pressure of a hand on his shoulder.
Hey, Mark, what are you working on?
Oh, sorry, Jerry. Mark looked up from his terminal. I was just deep in thought. Jerry sat on the edge of the platinum-blue desk in the gray-walled cubicle. He picked up a postcard from the neat and orderly desk and glanced briefly at the faint, spidery script on the back before turning it over to look at the picture. What mountain is this? Everest? No, actually it's K2, Mark said, took the card, shoved a pin through it, and impaled it on the wall, among other cards. Pictures of Big Ben, the Taj Mahal, Machu Picchu, Mount Fuji, and many other exotic lands were arranged chaotically on one wall of the otherwise sterile cubicle. He pointed to one card at the center of the haphazard collage and said, That one, that's Everest. Biggest and baddest of the big and bad. I've heard it said for every climber that makes it to the top, one of them dies before he gets back down. That doesn't sound like very good odds to me, Jerry chuckled. Sounds safer to stay right here. Safer, true, Mark said, turned back to his terminal and brought up another form to fill in. I'd rather die coming down Everest than rot away in this cubicle, he mumbled as Jerry left for his own workstation on the wall opposite Mark. Mark lay in the polyfiber-filled sleeping bag and listened as each labored breath ended with an abbreviated whistle. He pulled his brown wool balaclava down over his eyes and rolled onto his side to block out the light. He felt like a jack-o'-lantern lit up for Halloween as the rays of the setting sun struck the orange tent and set it aglow. I can never sleep with the lights on, he grumbled and coughed. Panicked, he stifled the cough as quickly as possible to prevent the Sherpa guide from hearing. He's like an old woman, Mark thought. I can hear it now.
Mr. Mark, you cannot climb today. You are sick. Let us wait another day and try tomorrow.
After weeks of preparation, of climbing, setting up camps, descending, and climbing again, they had finally arrived at Camp 4 at the edge of Everest's death zone. They had placed the camp days before and descended back to their previous camp to acclimate to the brutal high altitude. The death zone, above 26,000 feet, stretched from their final camp to the summit. Mark knew what challenges he would face in the morning. Temperatures could get so cold that areas of exposed skin would freeze in minutes. The snow would be frozen solid and slick. More than a few weary climbers had lost their focus and slipped from the trail. Their frozen corpses were still being ground between the feet of the glacier and the rock of the mountain itself as the mass of snow and ice slid inexorably down the mountain. What frustrated Mark the most, the oxygen level was so low at this altitude that climbing became exhausting and breathing labored. "I need to sleep," he growled through clenched teeth. He needed to rest his body to be strong and his mind clear for the most grueling leg of the expedition.
"Hey, Mark," Jerry said from the opposite side of the temporary wall. "I don't think I can take this job anymore. It's the same thing over and over. Open a form, search the document, fill in the form, shoot it off to accounting. How can you stand it day after day?"
When Mark didn't respond, Jerry said again, "Mark, are you there?"
"Yeah, Jerry," Mark said, coughed into his sleeve and asked, "What do you need?"
"I was wondering how you do it. I mean, you've been here longer than anyone else, and you just keep firing along day after day. How can you stand it?"
"I don't know, Jerry. I just try to stay focused."
"Focus," Mark said to himself, and focused his attention on the swaying circular smear of light cast by the halogen lamp strapped across his forehead. The early morning sky was black velvet behind a veil of shimmering diamonds. "Focus," he said again, and listened to the crunch, pause, crunch, pause, crunch of the crampons strapped to his boots. With each weary step, the sound of the razor-sharp metal spikes as they bit into the ice reassured him he was moving forward. "Focus," he gasped, and tried to ignore the gurgling in his lungs.
"Mr. Mark,"
the Sherpa had warned him before they broke camp. His eyes were pale ovals of reflected starlight in the blackness of the night.
"I listen to you cough in your sleep. You are not well. You cannot go on."
"Nonsense," was Mark's only reply as he clipped the carabiner through his harness and onto the climbing rope. He adjusted his headlamp, picked up his ice axe, and turned his back on the guide. "That's it, Mark," Jerry said again. "I don't care what it takes. I have to get out of this grind. We're here, what, 11, 12 hours a day? Sure, the overtime is great, but where are we in between? After we clock out, before we clock back in. That's what it feels like to me. Our real lives are just quick breathers between rounds in this cubicle." A deep sigh, a loud, long sip of coffee, and Jerry resumed. "I leave this place and hardly have time to eat, get drunk, and sleep before I'm shoving my time card into the reader for another day of mindless, soul-rotting drudgery. I don't care if I have to flip burgers or sell pest control services. Come tomorrow, I'm looking for something new. I quit." After a moment of silence, Jerry asked, "Mark, what do you think?"
"I can't quit," Mark mumbled.
The climbing rope grew suddenly taut and jerked Mark forward. The hired Tibetan man at the lead end of the rope turned to see why his charge had stopped again. The Sherpa was a brown smudge, the snow a bright amber background when viewed through the polarized lenses of his glacier glasses. They traversed the glacier toward the last leg of their ascent. The angle was so great that Mark leaned to his side and rested against the side of the glacier as it rose above him. To his other side, inches from his feet, the glacier fell away in a virtually sheer drop of 1,000 feet. The sun hung in the cold mid-morning sky, apathetic to the man who struggled toward the summit. The glacier shimmered in the sunlight. A billion stars twinkled on the snow. The sun and snow conspired against the climber and teased him into believing the summit was closer than it was. "I'm so close," he gasped into his oxygen mask. A sudden fit of coughing doubled him over as he hacked and gasped over and over. He felt the expectorated mucus settle between the rubber of the mask and his chin. He knew he had much farther to climb than it appeared, and for the first time began to doubt he could make it. "Hey, Mark," Jerry started up again, "I've been thinking. Maybe I won't get another job right away. I think I'll do some traveling like you do. I was wondering, when do you get the time to go to all those places? I mean, China, South America, the Middle East, Nepal? That would take weeks. And in what, the last 5 years you've worked here, I don't think I've ever seen you take any time off." There was only silence. "Mark, are you there?"
"Yeah, Jerry. Of course."
His voice was so faint it was almost a whisper. "Are you feeling okay? What are you putting in your coffee?" Jerry joked. "You're slurring your words."
"No, Jerry. I'm okay. Just feeling a little dizzy.
A little dizzy, Mark repeated, stopped, and leaned over his ice axe.
Just need to rest a bit, he told himself, closing his eyes. He listened to the wind as it whistled past, in harmony with the whistle in his wheezing breath. The wind reminded him of pleasant sunny days on a beach in Jamaica. He could feel the warm sun on his chest as a beautiful native, her white bikini in abrupt contrast to her dark skin, handed him a fruity drink in a coconut shell. The crunch of crampons on the ice woke him. He felt like his chest was on fire, burning from the inside out. He pressed against it with one gloved hand.
Mr. Mark, the Sherpa shouted to gain his attention, you must go back now. You will not make the summit.
Mark shook his head and pulled the mask from his face. Ping pong, he coughed, and bloody mucus spattered the snow at their feet. Speak English. You know I can't understand your jabbering. Mark tried to move past the little man who stood solidly in the narrow trail.
You must go down now or you will die, he said.
You little thief, Mark growled. You would rob me of the thousands of dollars I paid for this expedition. I can see the summit. It's right there. He jabbed his gloved finger at the peak towering above them. Indignation gave Mark renewed strength. He fumbled at the lock on his carabiner until it spun open. He flipped back the gate, unhooked his safety harness from the climbing rope, and pushed past the native guide. I paid you to get me up there, not hold me back. If you won't help me, I'll climb this mountain without you, he said and stumbled up the trail. The chatter of the Sherpa's pleading faded as the ringing in his ears increased. Mark panted in shallow, rapid breaths, and darkness crept in to steal away his vision. The burst of adrenaline quickly faded, and he sagged like a flag on a windless day. He dropped to his knees and coughed. Great gobs of mucus and blood froze quickly on the ice. Tired, he gasped. Just rest a moment. He closed his eyes and leaned into the icy bank. The ice felt warm and soft like his bed at home. Mark felt weightless, as if he were floating.
I'm calling it a day, Mark, Jerry said. Why don't you walk down with me? We can get a drink on the way out, celebrate my new plans. Maybe you can give me your travel agent's phone number.
No reply. Jerry walked around the partition and asked, Mark, are you coming? Mark still did not reply, but sat slumped in his chair. His bulging, bloodshot eyes stared blankly forward, and mucus mixed with blood trailed from the corner of his mouth and stained the front of his pastel blue shirt. On the floor, where it had dropped from his lifeless fingers, lay a new postcard. Darkly tanned women in white bikinis laughed and held drinks in coconut shells under a colorful banner. Come to Jamaica.
I think I like this story not only because it was so well written, but it reminds us that the imagination is limitless. Where would we be without it? Stuck in a cube, our minds wasting away like tropical plants in an ice storm, most likely. I just can't imagine how we would ever get through our day. So take hold of your imagination. Use it. Abuse it. Don't worry. It can take it. What doesn't kill it only makes it stronger. See there? I've even given you a prompt to start out with. Now, I would be remiss if I did not close out this episode by mentioning the ongoing chip-in fund I've set up for our editor, Tia Brink. For those of you who have not seen the post I put up last week, she's having heart surgery on the 10th of August. As such, I've set up this little fund to help out. She's an extraordinary woman and is desperately needed back here ASAP. So if you find yourself debating on what to do with your spare change, or if you were considering making a donation to the site, please click the Tia Brink Recovery Fund instead. That's all I have for this week. I would like to tell you that this week's music was courtesy of Christopher Carlson. You can check out more selections at ChristopherCarlson.com. And remember, this episode was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. So burn it, share it, do whatever you like with it. Just don't change it or try to sell it. Thanks for listening. Stay well. I'm in hell!